welcome back. I'm glad you could join me today. It's a fantastic day here, and I hope it is where you're at. So I'm glad you're here, and I hope you do a little painting with us and enjoy it as much as we do. Let's start out today and have them run all the colors across the screen that you need to paint along with me. And as usual, they'll come across in the same order as I have them on the palette, starting with the white and working around.
Buddy Robert Berry, and welcome to Retro Crush, the podcast, episode 88. Yes, 88. 1988 was a good year. Many things happened that year, none of which I will recount now, because this is going to be a very long episode. Yes, about an hour long, but it's a special treat. This episode, I'm going to play a recording that we made with Keith Lowell Jensen and myself, where we discussed together, just off the cuff, who we thought the top 10 comedians of all time were, particularly stand-up comedians. And I thought this turned out really good, and it's actually pretty interesting. Keith and I have actually studied stand-up comedy history pretty extensively, so this isn't just like a bunch of guys going, yeah, Eddie Murphy's funny. But I think you'll like this. So what you're going to hear is about a 45-minute clip. And then we're going to come back with some voicemails and some other stuff and some contest stuff. So without further ado, here is Keith Lowell Jensen and myself discussing the top 10 stand-up comedians of all time. Well, folks, I've got the legendary Keith Lowell Jensen here today.
Legendary, I like
legendary,
that.
Legendary. He's a stand-up comedian and a stand-up guy.
That's right.
So, Keith, you just had a comedy show this weekend.
I have seen the future of stand-up comedy. We had a show with Brent Weinbach this weekend, and if you haven't seen this guy, you've got to check him out. He's absolutely incredible. I'm into stand-up. I watch a lot of stand-up comedy.
Sure, I thought that's what we could talk about today.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm talking about, if you'd shut up. This guy's unlike anything else I've ever seen. Absolutely, man. Brent Weinbach.
What's
Remember
his gimmick?
Name? Go look him up.
Does he have, like, props and funny shit he pulls out of a box and stuff?
Not much in the way of props. He did bring out a telephone at one point to make some phone calls to, I don't want to describe his act because
like
it's just
Bob
too
Newhart's
weird and anything I described
kinda?
Wouldn't, no, quite different, quite different. If I saw any influence in there from anyone else, I'd say maybe a little touch of Gilbert Gottfried.
I had a little touch of Gilbert Gottfried once.
Yeah, a little penicillin just cleared it right up.
Yeah. So, who would you say if, like, we had to put a list of, like, the most greatest stand-up comedians of all time, who would you say would have to be in that top 10? Let's take turns. Let's take turns.
Okay, well, the one I put at number one is Francois Fly. No, just kidding. Is Woody Allen. He's my favorite stand-up comedian of all time.
Not known
absolutely.
So much for his stand-up comedy as his movies, for sure, but yeah, he did a lot of Ed Sullivan appearances, right?
His stand-up is brilliant. Yeah, there's a CD out that compiles the best of his albums.
You know what else is brilliant about Woody Allen? His Asian child fuckery.
There we go, yeah. I saw it coming, and I couldn't do anything
so,
to stop it.
So did Sun Yi.
Yeah, oh, he's not my favorite husband of all time, so I'm not saying I want to marry the guy. Funny, funny man, absolutely brilliant. So that'd be my number one. So that would make it your turn,
right.
Then. Go ahead.
Okay. Then I would throw in Richard Pryor.
Okay.
Got to be
in
the top 10,
right?
Argue I mean,
that.
You know, I mean,
absolutely.
It's debatable where in the top 10 some of these folks may lie, but okay. So back to you, good sir, Richard Pryor. I'd say you're definitely probably one of the most influential racy comedians of them all. I mean, you certainly don't have Eddie Murphy or half of those black kings of comedy, you know, without Richard Pryor there for sure. And arguably one of the better storytelling comedians, you know.
Yeah, yeah, he was able to pull off the storytelling and really dramatic elements that he would bring into stand-up. I mean, acting out a heart attack on stage and not closing his show with that, but actually going from that back into making people laugh. Right. You know, I should say, acting out a drug-induced overdose-type heart attack. After he'd really had one, you know.
Exactly.
I guess the thing I would say is the weirdest about him is imagine any modern celebrity, Mel Gibson, for instance. Look at him trying to bounce back from this recent scandal. Well, Richard Pryor sets himself on fire while smoking rock cocaine, and he's on stage in no time joking about it.
Right.
What would have ruined anyone else's career, and he doesn't even hide from it.
Right, and this is at a time, you know, when a celebrity doing drugs to that degree was not necessarily like a badge of courage that got you a VH1 special. I mean, this was something
that
hurt your career.
It would have destroyed anyone else.
Right. Okay, so
he's on stage saying, "I shot my motherfucking car," you know.
Exactly.
So that was very, very bad Richard Pryor impersonation. I'm not an impressionist. Okay.
Oh, I thought that was Carrot Top.
That's who that was.
Okay, so we got Woody Allen and Richard Pryor.
I'm going to put a sub-note here because I don't know if these guys are going to make it into my top 10, but if we mention Richard Pryor's influence, we have to mention that two people that paved the way for him were Red Fox and Dick Gregory.
Well, I think one of them is certainly...
And even Bill Cosby.
Let's just do
Bill Cosby has to go. Bill Cosby has to go into our top 10 somewhere.
That's our third choice.
That's not my three, though. I just had to mention it. Right. My number three is going to be just for pushing the boundaries as much as he did and opening up so many avenues to express yourself in whatever wild way you wanted to in comedy. I got to put Andy Kaufman at number three.
Okay, certainly one of the leading absurd comedians of all time. I mean, you got Stephen Wright. Perhaps.
I don't think Stephen Wright's that absurd. He just acts a little weird. He's actually a return to the one-liner in a lot of ways.
Sure, Henny Youngman type, perhaps. But I guess as far as a...
That's funny.
You know, like a Mitch Hedberg type that really relied
right.
on a lot of absurd... I mean, but you're right. I mean, Andy took comedy into two areas that...
Kind of performance art realm.
Exactly. I mean, you know, from something as silly as lip-syncing to the Mighty Mouse theme song, which just seems so dumb and elemental in idea, but the execution was just amazing.
Oh,
sure.
Yeah. And then wrestling women and Tony Clifton, my God.
Yeah.
Pissing everyone off with that one. Because pissing people off, it's funny.
Right.
About it. If Andy hadn't died, what became super popular? Super popular. What had a huge resurgence right after he died? Wrestling.
AIDS.
Wrestling, which he had closely affiliated himself with. So he knew. Everyone's like, why are you throwing away your career? But he was riding the wave. He knew what he was doing.
All right. Well, I will put in Bob Newhart next. I know you were the one who got to interview him recently. But, I mean, the comedy album. You can kind of, though they existed before his, I mean, his was probably at the time the most successful comedy album.
A comedy album, a stand-up comedy album as we think of it, his was really, as far as my research can tell me, only the second one in existence after Shelley Berman.
Yeah, so I mean, it was really good. In fact, in the interview, which we actually have on one of the older episodes of our podcast, which I'll reference specifically shortly, but, this is at a time when Frank Sinatra was putting out popular albums, and I think he beat Frank Sinatra for best record that year, and just, you know, to put that in context, I mean, that you can buy a comedy record and listen to it at your home, I think really, helped make stand-up comedians a lot more accessible to folks, because really at the time, I mean, to go see it, you didn't have comedy clubs everywhere you looked, and if you weren't in a major
right.
metropolitan area, or you never got to see a stand-up comedian in person. I mean, it was pretty much either your big cities or Vegas or some places like that, but you know, you just didn't have a comedy club in your town, and so, you know, the comedy album really opened that up for folks. I mean, really Bill Cosby, Steve Martin, George Carlin really followed suit with just all-time great albums that people really enjoyed. And a lot of people's only exposure to these comedians. Yeah, for sure. Okay, so number five.
Let me say, you know what, another thing about Newhart coming out with that album that I think we have to mention as far as him being an influential comedian. And he talks about this a little in the interview. It was a very new form of comedy as well. I mean, we talked about the old kind of Henny Youngman style, and Newhart was right on the cusp of going into more of the monologue style comedy.
Right.
And people like him and Shelley Berman and Mort Saul and Lenny Bruce were really kind of championing and bringing about this, he referred to it as a sea change in comedy. So not only was it the first time that people saw a stand-up comedy album as viable, but it moved that genre of comedy out of what they called the shishi rooms, places like the Hungry Eye in San Francisco or the Purple Onion, and kind of moved them into the mainstream.
Okay, well, we got Woody, Richard, Andy, and Bob. Who we got for our fifth selection?
You know, you really put me on the spot here. I wasn't able to prepare this. I'm gonna go and at this point throw in the first person to bring stand-up comedy into, you know, stadiums. The guy that became the arena rocker of stand-up comedy, and that, of course, is Steve Martin.
Oh, that was gonna be my next pick too. That's good. Yes, now Steve, there's a guy. I mean, this is the equivalent to me of like when Michael Jordan gave up basketball to play baseball. And
right.
Though Steve Martin has certainly been a brilliant writer, and he's been in some of my favorite films, the fact that he's abandoned stand-up comedy as an art form pretty much since the early 80s, it's kind of sad, yeah, because he was certainly one of the best at it.
But who doesn't? I mean, in some ways, I'm glad that he left. Who other than George Carlin has hung on for life? Or maybe Rodney, but as much as I love Rodney, you got to admit that there was a point where you'd heard enough Rodney, where you'd take a 5 or 6 year break before you needed to hear Rodney again.
Well, right. I mean, Rodney was obviously a shtick heavy comedian too. I mean, there's only no respect.
Right.
I don't get no respect. I mean, there's only so many no respect
jokes. Steve Martin type stuff. You think of all the things that you can do with a film, how wide open it is. But with stand-up comedy, you got a guy on a stage saying funny things, you know, and it's. I think it's really challenging to have the kind of career that someone like George Carlin had.
Yeah, there's not too many. In fact, while we're talking George, I'm going to throw him into the mix because I think for longevity's sake, I mean, George Carlin, not only has he been doing comedy about as long as Woody Allen has. I mean, I remember he did some Ed Sullivan type appearances as well, which are rather funny when you look at him because he had just short hair with no facial hair and. You know, he was a much cleaner cut comedian when he first debuted. But, I mean, it's not like, it's just George doing his old shtick. I mean, it would be so easy for him to do, like, oh, here's the dirty word you can't say, and, you know, why do they call it pee? There's no pee in it. I mean, just, you know, he's known for certain kinds of humor, but, you know, he stays on top of the stuff, and he's still very relevant. I mean, he could have an HBO special that comes out next month. And yeah, he's maybe a little bit more cranky and sometimes even conspiracy crazy with some things, but the guy's still on, and he's pretty damn sharp and relevant. I mean, you know, he could make jokes about Hurricane Katrina and the way it was handled in a way that's as good as any brand new comedian could.
Right, and I think, you know, someone like Bill Hicks, who I think was wonderful, but Bill Hicks is being made a legend of now because he died young, and Lenny Bruce is being made a legend of now because he died young, and George Carlin made the, you know, mistake of going on living, but I think he's every bit as cutting edge and constantly pushing the envelope as those guys. And the fact that he's playing places like Vegas with that material actually is even cooler. Because he doesn't tone it down for Vegas.
No, in fact, I think he had some folks walk out because he was kind of turned on his own audience. It was kind of funny.
I read an interview with him where he said Vegas is the one place in the world where people will come see you for that price tag without knowing who you are. So it's the only place where he can really shock people. You know, someone from the Midwest, they're going to throw away $60 on a comedian they've never heard of just because they're in Vegas. That's what you do. You play the slots, you go see the funny guy, you go home. And so, yeah, and then he starts, you know, telling them that their god is full of shit and that their country is just ass backwards and
yeah,
he sends them running out the door.
I mean, you get a real sense that if Carlin was this unchained in the 60s, he probably would have been, you know, thrown in jail somehow by the FBI. I mean, he's still, I mean, I think he's, what, 64 or 5 now, but he's still one of the most hardcore, subversive, dangerous comedians out there. I mean, he'll say things as extreme as, you know, we should probably put a bullet in Bush's head and the world would be a lot better for it. You know, but
here's something funny about Carlin. He was arrested, and what he was arrested for was bank robbery.
Oh, you're kidding me! That's
no,
hilarious.
No, and it's one he was still pretty clean as far as his appearance, and he was just starting to push the envelope a little on stage. Before he unveiled Hippie George, he actually went into hiding. Not into hiding, but you know what I mean. He kind of took a sabbatical and you know, let his hair grow and then really presented himself. This is the new me, and it was a bit coming out. But he was starting to push the edge, and he was smoking pot, and that'll make you a little paranoid. And he says he clipped, his version of the story is that he clipped the ad for a show that him and his comedy partner, I don't remember the guy's name, but he was part of a duo, and he clipped the ad and had it in the pocket of his suit and took it to the dry cleaner. And apparently on the other side of the ad was a story about a bank robbery. That seems pretty flimsy evidence for the cops to grab the guy, but he was starting to look a little frazzled. He was a little bit of a stoner already. And so I guess the dry cleaner thought he looked suspicious already, then found that bank robbery article in his pocket and called the police, and they arrested him for bank robbery, and he missed a show.
Awesome.
As far as I know, I don't know if he was ever arrested for obscenity. I'm not sure that he was. Yeah, they made him wear a suit jacket on Saturday Night Live, but I don't think they ever arrested him.
We'll take a little sidetrack here before we finish the list out, and I think, you know, one thing that's going to happen is, you know, when I put lists together, I try to make sure they're diverse and truly reflective of many kinds of comedians, and not just, you know, so often I see things that on other pop culture publications and sites, like, you know, here's the top 50, let's say, certain kind of movie of all time, and then you read it, and it's just like all stuff from the last 8 to 10 years, you know, of all time to these people. So, and I think we're certainly doing a good job getting many different eras represented here. But one of my thoughts is that, well, gosh, is this going to end up being an all-male list? You know, can we think of any women that are worthy of being in the top 10? But I'm starting to think
that
there's
none
worth of it.
No, my next choice was going to be a female.
Okay, who we got?
I think she's incredibly underrated. Mm-hmm. We talked about comedy albums, and if you grab this woman's comedy albums, you're in for a treat because she never just recorded her stage show. Her comedy albums, it was the art form of the comedy album, and she's absolutely brilliant. She works with a writing partner, of course, and I have to give some credit to her as well, but Lily Tomlin.
Oh, yes. I agree. I mean, I'd say maybe short of Gilda Radner and maybe...
Radner? Could you call Radner stand-up?
Well, I mean, she certainly was famous for doing some shows. You know, I mean, she had her Gilda show, and she, you
but
know,
even her
shows. What she's
very
known
sketch.
For. Oh, I agree, and you know, maybe Ellen DeGeneres would, or Margaret Cho, perhaps, as far as just success goes. Maybe you could even argue
Ellen
Sandra Bernhard. But
yeah, maybe.
Lily definitely paid her comedy dues, and I think you could easily think of her as a great comedian, and not just a great female comedian.
And if you want to think of a couple other, you know, wonderful female comedians that paved the way, Moms Mabley, Phyllis Diller, Roseanne Barr, who I think was a phenomenal stand-up comedian. I loved
her
stand-up.
And really, you can't ignore, I mean, she another one who's known for a lot more than her stand-up, but incredibly important for comedy in the late 80s and early 90s was Rosie O'Donnell.
Yeah. I enjoyed Rosie O'Donnell's stand-up as well.
I mean, she was pretty much the face of stand-up comedy on cable TV for about 2 years. I mean, she hosted so many comedy shows, you know, it was kind of good there. All right, well, so now I was going to be a sidetrack, but
I guess it goes back to your turn then. I gave up Lily Tomlin.
Lily Tomlin.
I have to name the other person that I had.
By the way, speaking of Lily Tomlin, to stray a bit here, there's a movie she made. This is, I believe, right after...
Woman?
No, it's horrible, I understand. It's called Moment by Moment. And it's with her and John Travolta. Did you hear that?
Really?
Yeah, basically, this movie came out right after Saturday Night Fever was big. And it's right. It's within the same 3 years that Grease
so
and Saturday...
So they're red hot right there.
He's red hot, and his follow-up to Saturday Night Fever, he chooses... Moment by Moment. And if you could get this, is that she is this a widower or divorcee or of some sort. She's living alone. And John Travolta's a runaway. So he's semi-homeless, and he apparently ran away because his parents forgot his birthday.
Nice.
And so he ends up...
I'm not peeing. I'm pouring a glass of water.
All right. Well, I was kind of hoping that. But somehow he ends up sweet-talking her into moving in with her, and they have love scenes together. And, you know, they're making out and kissing. And the commercial, I've never seen the commercial for it on television.
And he's supposed to be a child.
No, well, he's like 18, you know.
Oh, all right. Running away at 18, I got it.
But anyway, just, you know, can you think of a couple with less chemistry than John Travolta and Lily Tomlin?
I just think that's
hilarious.
Well, maybe Rosie O'Donnell and just about anyone, but other than that, no, I can't think of a more ill combination. That's pretty bizarre.
Yeah. But yeah, you got to get, you know, Lily, her stuff with Laugh-In, her various characters, whether it was Edith Ann, was that the little girl character that would sit in the big rocking mm-hmm. chair? You have the switchboard operator, funny character that, you know, they
her thought, her intrepid reporter that would harass her mm-hmm. on her albums.
I recall my grandparents had a comedy album of hers that I think was nothing but that operator character.
So, yeah, I have. Now I'm trying to remember because I have the album that's the operator on the cover.
Maybe it's just on the cover, but I remember.
Yeah, I think there are some other skits.
In fact,
on
I remember it had a mustache drawn on it that my one of my uncles drew on it.
Oh, great!
Yeah. You know what's a funny thing about uncles? Since I'm airing dirty family laundry.
What's that?
Once I got like a bunch of, I was like really into comic books, even as a kid, of course, and my uncle had left behind a bunch of X-Men comics that he was buying as an adult. So this is stuff from like the mid and late 80s, right? So Marvel comics from the mid and late 80s, and this guy's probably, you know, 35 at this point that he had bought these comics, but he was living alone or whatever, I don't know the whole deal. So I get a hold of these comic books he left behind. My grandma says, hey, here's a bunch of comics that you might like. So I'm like, oh, awesome. Well, I look at them, and, like, he had drawn on a lot of them. He had, like I remember, like he'd drawn nipples and pussy lips on all the female characters.
Like, oh, that's great.
I just think that's awesome. So, okay, well, it's back to me. We've got... Let's see, 7 folks so far, and I think with my next one, I'm going to go with Bill Cosby.
I was going to. Someone had to. Yeah. And I mean, there's one more glaring omission at this point, but
yeah, I mean, you got to have Bill Cosby. Certainly, probably one of the most successful comedians of them all.
Oh yeah.
You know, from commercials to numerous successful television shows. I mean, it's one thing to think that, okay, yeah, the Cosby Show and his follow-up to that, but, I mean, he was also an I Spy with Robert Culp in the 60s and, you know,
right.
A ton of great movies. And I mean, for a while, his HBO specials were huge, and he's written successful books.
Fat Albert.
I mean, that is a Bill Cosby show that you cannot deny. And it's there's an example of a you know, taking something from a comedy bit and evolving it to something bigger than ever, and you know, and just seemingly a really nice guy. I love the way he speaks out about how Black America is representing itself, or settling for less.
I love the way he punches out Tommy Smothers.
What?
True story, and I've read that there's a really great book. Rebel Comedians of the 50s and 60s, is the subtitle. It's Seriously Funny is the name of the book. And, in it they have Smothers' version of the story and Cosby's version of the story, and they both agree that it happened pretty much the same way. They're at the Playboy Mansion. Smothers had been speaking very publicly about Bill Cosby not doing enough about race relations or speaking out about the racial problems in the country, which is kind of ironic now. In fact, it was ironic then because Cosby was trying to go the Dick Gregory route, and his agent really pushed hard to get him out of that mold and into the friendlier stuff that we know him for. So he had that in him from the beginning. And now he's got this little white kid saying that, you know, he's not doing enough and speaking bad about him. So they have a little public feud, and then they both end up at the Playboy Mansion on the same night. Smothers decides he has to talk to Bill Cosby. So he comes up behind him and, you know, taps him on the shoulder.
This is the white-haired Smothers?
Or the one with the mustache. No, Tommy is the white-haired one that plays the kind of dumb character.
Okay,
he's actually the more politically radical of the two. Although they're both, you know, pretty liberal, pretty daring.
Sure.
But so, you know, he taps Cosby. He says, hey, you know, I think we should talk. And Cosby says, get out of my face, you know. And I guess this goes on for a while if some others keeps coming up on him. And Cosby keeps saying, you really need to get away from me if you're smart, you know. And finally, Smothers says, look, why won't you just talk to me? And Cosby had warned him enough, laid him out. Boom! Punched him, put him down.
Wow.
And that's the story of Bill Cosby punching out Tommy Smothers.
Did they ever reconcile, as far as you know, or?
I have no idea. But all during that early part of Cosby's career, he was, his agent had a really hard time doing damage control because he got in fights with press people during interviews.
Wow.
He was, you know, everyone's like, oh, Cosby's so angry now. It's like, he always was. And then on stage, he could give us that
sweet
character.
Charming,
like,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying he was a jerk. I mean, most of it was some anger that I can kind of agree with. You know, like I said, Dick Gregory was his hero. He liked some righteous indignation about the kind of things he saw in the world. He had a really rough upbringing, raised his little brothers. He didn't have a dad around, you know.
Right.
So I'm not saying he was a jerk, but he's always been an outspoken, angry guy who then learned to tame it down. And I think in the process did more for race relations in this country than just about any other entertainer I can think of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, he put a rich doctor, put a black doctor and married to a black lawyer with a bunch of really nice kids on television and had people like my uncle watching it. And I won't say any more about my uncle.
Yeah, well, that was another show. Okay, so back to you. We got Woody Allen, Richard Pryor, Andy Kaufman, Bob Newhart, Steve Martin, George Carlin, Lily Tomlin and Bill Cosby. Maybe that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So there's 8 of them there. We got 2 more to add. So,
all right. Well, we've got a glaring omission. I've got to fix it. I'm not even sure that I wouldn't try to maybe move him up higher on the list.
Well, then we're not ranked. These aren't ranked, by the way. We're just saying these are.
Oh,
the
good,
10.
Good.
Yeah, we're not
this
saying one of these is better than the other. But
well, in that case, I will stop hesitating and I'll just say Lenny Bruce. And a lot of people really get into the legend of Lenny and then listen to his albums and are disappointed. And then the question comes up, is he overhyped? Is he as important as they say?
Yeah, I'm kind of in that camp. I mean, I don't think that he's overhyped so much, but I think here's a guy that you heard about. And, oh, this guy was so controversial. They were always shutting him down, and he was talking too dirty. And I think, yeah, I think you're thinking, wow, this guy must be like Sam Kinison times 100, you know? And by the time you end up hearing the guy, it's like, well, okay, I mean, he's...
He took on religion first, and that's what got him in trouble more than anything else. He didn't get in trouble because he said cocksucker. I mean, that was technically what they arrested him for. But he got in trouble because he talked about the Pope. He talked about the Catholic Church. He did this Get Religion Incorporated. He took on homophobia long before that was in vogue. He, you know, talked about prohibition, about prostitution being illegal as a form of prohibition. You know, he was way ahead of his time politically in a lot of ways. I would argue that he was extremely funny, but I think that the most significant thing he did had nothing to do with him being controversial. And that was the thing I referred to earlier, of a guy that was, and he saw it happening around him. He wasn't the first, but he grabbed it and really went all the way with it, who walked on stage and said, let's talk. Let's actually talk and not worry about the jokes and not worry about the gags. And he worked the funny in, and he was brilliant on his feet. I mean, he would go up there with unwritten stuff and just chatter, and really got into doing monologues and doing pieces that meant something and not going for one-liners and rim shots. And I feel he was one of the people that really forwarded that and brought in poetry and brought in the jazz idioms and, you know, didn't do it in the schmaltzy way that the Vegas entertainers were doing, but did it in a way that was really sincere and it's actually really good. And he was one of the beats, you know?
Right.
So I would put Lenny Bruce on the list at this juncture.
Cool. Well, you know, I'm kind of torn for this last entry here, and this is certainly, there's tons more that we could be naming here.
And we will. We there's a few we have to name.
Right, but you know,
the 10.
I'm gonna go with Johnny Carson.
And, huh.
I don't know. I'm thinking Johnny Carson from the perspective of. I mean, he really was doing. stand-up comedy in a lot of ways. I mean, certainly he was good with all his skits, his dialogue with famous people, his banner with Ed. But if you think about the monologues he gave every night, I mean, you could argue he may have done more different stand-up comedy routines than nearly any comedian in existence. If you want to
count, he probably clocked more hours. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think there's also a guy who was a friend to comedians, probably gave many comedians their first shot. You know, I mean, there's very charitable to comedians for sure. I mean, I read about how he, really took Ray Combs, who hosted the Family Feud after Richard Dawson came on board, under his wing, and it was some of his appearances on that show that got him the job. And when Ray Combs, you know, had all the tragic endings to his life and his family was penniless, I mean, Johnny stepped in and paid for the funeral.
Wow.
Not that alone makes you deserving to be on there, but I mean, just really, there's a guy that you know what to get. I mean, there's longevity. I mean, from the very end of his show to the very beginning, you know, he was able to throw in a little bit of naughtiness, you know, to the degree that NBC would allow, but still, I mean, it wasn't like you'd be totally happy.
Oh, he pushed the censors really far, actually.
Exactly. I mean, and as a further testament to his skill, I mean, what a lot of people don't remember is when there was a writer's strike in the late 80s, I believe it was, you know, the writers could no longer write stuff for his monologues. And he then just decided to do all his own stuff again.
Oh, wow.
Which was great. You know, he wanted to keep the show going. And he said, well, I'll write my own stuff, you know. And I believe when he passed away, David Letterman had this beautiful moment where he told a bunch of jokes. And these were all, you know, current Paris Hilton, bunch of timely jokes, you know. And he said, what's really special about all those jokes I just told you was that they were all written by Johnny Carson. And I guess even though he retired from television, he was still a big fan of being a part of it. And he was faxing Letterman jokes pretty regularly to use in his monologue that Letterman admitted. And I thought, oh, poor Jay, you know, he just never got that approval from Johnny all the way, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I think you got to give Johnny some credit there. I mean, some other ones that come to mind, we could maybe just throw some out there.
Let me say a few things about Johnny first. I was reading the I forget what it's called now, but the I think it's called Live from New York, this book about Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting to note that Saturday Night Live exists because Carson wanted to stop having The Tonight Show repeat at that slot on Saturday nights.
Oh, wow.
And that opened up the slot Saturday Night Live, and Carson did have to give approval to certain things that they did. I mean, he was the big man on campus they had to go to. The other thing thought I have about Carson is when I was first really getting into stand-up myself, and even now when I talk to people that are just getting into it, you can blow a joke, and that doesn't blow your routine. The joke you blow could be your best chance to really win your audience over, and I always point to Carson as an example of that.
Oh, he could blow a joke
bombed than worked. And yet that was the funniest part. He would hit the joke off into the audience like a golf club. He would tap on, or with a golf club, he would tap on the mic. He would, you know, blame the writers, which I'm sure he did a lot of during the writer's strike. you know, so that's one neat thing about it. Now, to get controversial for a minute, though, the thing I kept seeing that I was so kind of upset by was that he was such a wonderful man that I didn't feel we needed to be full of shit when he died. And they were when they were saying everyone liked Johnny. Johnny never had an enemy. Johnny, you know, he was the one guy in show business that was universally liked. And that's bullshit. Johnny Carson had a really bad reputation for stealing jokes and stealing bits. And the person he stole from the most, and it's undeniable. And again, I'm not saying the man wasn't brilliant. He was incredible. Mm-hmm. But, you know, let's accept him in all of his complex personality. He took a lot from Steve Allen. And, mm-hmm. and Steve Allen did the bit with the, now my mind's blanking. What did Johnny Carson call his character that would, you know, give the answer before the question?
Oh, Karnak, yes.
Karnak. Steve Allen did a very similar bit. And then someone told Steve Allen, hey, the video DJ does a bit like that. And Steve Allen was so concerned that he might have heard it and not realized he'd heard it and gotten the idea from the guy or whatever, that he contacted the guy arranged to give the guy some money for the bit. You know, I mean, that's how Steve Allen was.
Yeah, yeah.
But Steve Allen was really furious that Johnny Carson wouldn't do the same, wouldn't acknowledge, you know, where any of his bits came from. So he did have some enemies, and he, especially when he was starting out, he had a hard time with Steve Allen, and Steve Allen admits that he's very talented and had a lot of respect for him, but Steve Allen also had some issues with him. So not universally loved and never had a problem with anyone. There is a little tarnish on his halo, but he's a wonderful man nonetheless, and yeah, I would agree with you putting him on the list.
Right. Well, you know the thing about Steve Allen, a lot of people don't know, two sets of genitals.
Really?
Yeah.
See, that's fascinating.
Two sets of them, actually. So he had two dicks and two vaginas. So he had an orgy in his pants at all
times.
That's
incredible. See, I knew he had big balls, but I didn't know he had multiple balls.
So who are some other also-rans that you know, now that just throwing some other, without maybe so much into each one, but I mean some folks that you really...
Well, what I thought would be interesting is to say some of the people that we're listening to now who are really funny. You know, I already said, I was telling you Brent Weinbach at the top of this is incredible, too bad Mitch Hedberg died. He was something else. We named Stephen Wright. Eddie Izzard, I can't get enough of.
Chris Absolutely Rock, incredible. Love him or hate him, got to admit he's on top of his game.
Not anymore. His last CD was miserable, and it hardly made a blip on anyone's radar either.
Well, that's true. David Cross?
So, I've never been a fan of David Cross's. I agree with him politically, but don't find him funny. I just listen to some guys saying cool stuff I agree with for an hour.
Sort of the comedian du jour now that's getting shoved down everybody's throat is Dane Cook.
I like a little bit.
Yeah, but he's like, you know, wow, Dane Cook, man. He's definitely like the Dave Matthews of comedy, you know.
And that's actually an apt... comparison, because I'm not real crazy about Dave Matthews either, but I can certainly respect that he has some skills.
Yeah.
It's too bad we couldn't put Rodney on our list. He was one of those.
Rodney's up there. I think also Eddie Murphy in his heyday. I'm surprised how, you know, a lot of Eddie's stuff really does not stand up to the test of time. I mean, you watch some of his bits.
Well.
It's really hateful and... It's not in a funny way. I mean, like, you can listen to some of Andrew Dice Clay, and you kind of know it's a character.
Right.
But when Eddie's talking about how he doesn't like faggots looking at his ass while he's on stage, you're kind of like, wow, he really thinks that. I mean, it's not... I mean, not to say that Clay's anywhere close to the league of Eddie Murphy, but, I mean, you know, whereas Clay seemed like a stupid cartoon character that kind of people took too seriously... It's almost like, you know, Eddie Murphy just, you know, he's got some funny bits, and of course his stuff on Saturday Night Live is about the best stuff they ever did.
Right.
But, you know, wow. Rickles, another one? Don Rickles?
Red Fox almost made it on the list.
Yeah.
That was close. Who else? The Smothers Brothers, they were awesome.
I would have been willing to put together. Dennis Miller a little higher up there had he not been such a... I mean, it just seemed like he just totally switched sides, you know? And here's a guy
weird.
That was attacking conservative America with such fervor, and he was just so dead on, and then one day he's like, man, George Bush is great! And you're like, what? I mean, and not that a comedian's not entitled to have that opinion, but it was just such a complete flip of what he
really
was like.
Really weird, yeah.
Yeah, it was almost like someone just beat the shit out of him and said, guess what, you're now a Republican. And
replaced
like,
him with a robot.
Whoa, okay, you know?
I love these Shelley Berman, Dick Gregory.
Milton Berle.
Milton Berle, amen. Hey, you know who had one really, really fun album, and it's unfortunate that he tends to be doing the same material now, and that he hasn't been able to keep up with things, but boy, was that one album one of the best I ever heard, is Emo Phillips, Live at the Hasty Pudding Theater.
One of my favorite
comedy albums
by
ever.
By itself, it's just amazing. I think some
Nichols
other...
and May. Nichols and May were really important. Mike Nichols, that went on to be the great filmmaker, did the credit, and then Elaine May, who went on to make Ishtar, but she's great too. She's wonderful.
How about, you gotta go with some of the older Golden Age classics that I think we omitted, like Milton Berle, George Burns, Jack Benny.
Penny Youngman, Jack Benny.
Yeah, you know, I mean,
Phyllis Diller.
For sure.
She was
also,
awesome.
Interesting guy as well, and you gotta look at, you know, Dave Chappelle. known for his great sketch comedy, but just what a funny crash and burn story for nothing other than just his own personality making him crash and burn.
Right.
It's not like he did a bunch of coke one day and you lost him. I mean, but in a way, I mean, is it any different? I mean, a comedian that committed career suicide in a way, you know, instead of overdosing on drugs that just, you know, you don't really, I mean, I saw some of those Lost episodes on that sort of season three they patched together. Horrible stuff. I mean, it's like two or three good skits, but I mean, every other skit's like, sure, hot being rich. Oh, I got so much money now. Everybody treats me differently now. Like, okay, that's not worth a season full of shows, you know?
I love, and I know people are real divided. Actually, people aren't divided on this one. People tend to disagree with me on this one, but I challenge anyone to see him live and not laugh their ass off. Neil Hamburger. I think Neil Hamburger is just
some good stuff by him. We'll try to get some
incredible. He's awesome.
Another one, an up and comer who, you know, maybe getting more famous because of his show right now. But I'd sure like to see more of his stand-up comedy. Is Louis C.K. This guy, he's got a great show on HBO now. That's called Lucky Louie.
I'll have to come over to your place and watch it. I don't have cable,
so
and I've missed
funny.
It.
It's funny. I mean, it's like it's a sitcom on HBO, so it's your typical three-camera sitcom filmed in front of a live studio audience. But it's just like, Josh, what if there were no censors whatsoever, and we could just...
Right.
Know? And it's still typical sitcom-type scenarios, you know, like, but they're a little bit more daring, like, you know, he gets maybe thrown in jail for the night because him and his buddies were drunk driving, or there's some runaway teenage girl of their friends that's staying with them, and she keeps bringing older guys over and having sex with them, and just, there's, you know, it's just, it's just stuff turned on its ear, but the stuff's really well done, and just very, very funny. Another guy I think is just great. He's always going to be one of those good working man's comedians that that people may remember more when he's dead than now. But Bobby Slayton, I love the guy.
Oh, the pitbull of comedy.
Pitbull of comedy. Yeah. You know, typical.
I know his reputation, but I don't know his work.
Just a really good, more of a, if you can imagine like a Don Rickles, but with more of a political bent and just a real attack, rapid fire type delivery. Just really funny guy.
Patton Oswalt is getting really big right now. He's got a little bit part on King of Queens there, and his stand-up is pretty consistent and funny. He's real low-key. Hey, you know, a local guy here, if we can hype some of our locals, Tapan Trivedi, who's at, I think it's IndianComedian.com. Very,
like
very funny guy.
Indian like dot on the head, or Indian I work in a casino Indian?
He's Hindu. Oh. Yeah, he's from India. They have some wonderful racism there, though. Thank you. I just got to perform with him this weekend, and I'll blow one of his lines for him, but it's a great line. He says,
okay, that's not all you'll blow it is.
That's what we're getting to in a minute. He says, I think that religion is wonderful. He says, I think that religion is like a big cock. It's a wonderful thing to have, but you don't want to shove down your throat all the time.
There you go.
And the silence in the room. I forgot there's not an audience here. But that's a great line, and he cracks me. It's funnier with his heavy Indian accent, of course. Yeah.
All right, well, you know, hey, we got a lot of good comedians that we've talked about today. And, again, you can always check out the comedy of Keith Lowell Jensen. Why don't you give us your preferred, one of your eight websites that you would prefer people to visit?
Well, I have a client that I serve as an agent for whose career has taken off far beyond mine, who I like to promote, myspace.com/flycomedian, F-L-Y comedian. That's Francois Fly. I got, a couple of videos put up on that space for him recently from the Steve Allen Theater down in L.A. Man, he's funny, that guy. But for myself, just go to rockass.net, and I have a bunch of stuff up there. I actually got some video footage of me performing this weekend that I'm getting ready now, and it's pretty low quality, just a camcorder, but I'll get it up on YouTube soon.
Hey, and you gave me my stand-up comedy start.
Your
so
debut.
Long ago.
I wish you would do some more. I think you were well on your way to having some good stuff there.
Well, it sure makes
you didn't
appreciate,
have good stuff, but you were on your way.
It's, I think, doing stand-up comedy's one of the hardest. I mean, it's easy to write something funny because you got a lot of time to iron it out, but boy, nothing's worse than throwing out a few jokes and just hearing crickets chirping. Even, I mean, you know the stuff's funny. I mean, it could even just be a bad crowd, but you can't blame it on that crowd. You know, you just got to keep rolling with it. But.
Right, right. And that's the hardest thing. One of the hardest things to learn is to have those few that bomb and not even let it affect the rest of your routine, to let them know you're still having fun with it.
Yeah. All right, well, thanks again for your time, though. Keith. And
hey, thank you. This has been a blast. If we did more, we did more ones like this, I'd probably want to be on soon. We didn't even talk about like raping
driving
your mom
around town
or
talking
anything.
About the shitty movie we just saw is not for you.
Right. No, that's fun. That's fun. We'll do that again soon. All right, man. Thanks a lot.
Talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, that was a lot of fun. Thanks again to Keith Lowell Jensen for talking with us there. So, you know, it's kind of funny. Yesterday I was at the soccer game that my son was playing, and this lady was, like, getting way too enthusiastic about her kid's performance on the other team. So she pulls out this rolling pin and puts peanut butter on it, and then she starts shoving it inside of her. And then, hey, do you guys hear that? I sure do. It's time for Retro Crush Voicemail. It's time to play the messages that people left for me. Oh, they're so nice. I think you'll like them. And there's a special celebrity caller today. I think it's really cool. Anyway. So, yes, as always, you can call the Retro Crush hotline at 916-231-9480 and leave a voicemail. And we got a couple voicemails that I thought I'd play for you here that we received. Here's our first one.
Hey, it's Wolvertone. Benny, you freaking rock, dude. I got all your podcasts downloaded now, as I was on, I think, 80-something or whatever. And then I went back and downloaded all of them, but they only went back to, like, 42 or something like that. So anyway, I've been listening to all your back ones to kind of, like, get the whole thing going. And I'm on 63 right now, so I'm catching up. And when I do, you better start putting out some more, because I like it. 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 Talk to you later, sucker!
Well, thanks so much. You know, it's always great to get calls from drunk drivers out there. You know, make sure... I think that we have a sobering effect on them and make them a little more safe. So if you're out there drunk driving, you know, listen to our podcast. Maybe we can help you beat the odds there, you know. Our next voicemail, it's from a very special celebrity...
Yo, what is up, Robert Perry? This is Stephen talking. I was just listening to your podcast and I found it even more engrossing than a black hole cascade resonance. You know, a lot of people think that I am just a bored old stick in the mud. But I also enjoy watching Fraggle Rock and collecting Garbage Pail Kids. Who is my favorite Garbage Pail Kid, you ask? It would have to be even Stephen, of course. Fa fa fa, oh my aching sides. Anyway, please keep it coming. I would like to be shirt from you and wear it at the next international conference in nuclear physics. Okay, man, keep it reals. Goodbye.
Wow, that was, you know, probably the most noted physicist that's ever called our podcast. So thanks for the call, Stephen. That was really kind of neat. And give me your email. I'd be happy to send a T-shirt your way. Thanks to all of you. Last podcast, I made a kind of a begging plea for folks to buy shirts from me, and sold quite a bit of them. Really, really, really cool. And if we still have plenty for sale, go ahead and check out the front page of Retro Crush, and you'll see a picture near the bottom of the page of a guy wearing one of our shirts. And if you click it, you can see the three different varieties that we have for sale. And Also, check out our advertisers. You know, we got a lot of good advertisers on our site. I wanted to thank a few of them really quickly here. Long-time advertisers, 80stees.com. It's 80stees.com. A lot of great 80s, 70s, and 60s shirts, actually, too. We've got freebento.com, which is a really cool site. Phil, a longtime friend, runs that there, and he's got lots of cool, neat Japanese and genre toys. We got the fine folks at Action HQ, who sell a lot of cool action figures and neat stuff out of Hong Kong. PureHero.com, really cool bicycling shirts. with superhero insignias and whatnot. I mean, they're really great quality. I've got a Black Venom Spider-Man one I really like. And, you know, a lot of others. I don't want to name them all off, but we just started running a trailer for Rockstar Games' Bully video game that's coming out in October. Rockstar makes the whole Grand Theft Auto series of games, and this is one about a high school bully situation at a prep school. And it's already, of course, getting the prerequisite controversy, but go to the front page of Retro Crush, and we've got the trailer right there. If you just click it, you can watch it. And really appreciate it if you checked it out. You know, it's free, to look at, and it'd be nice to show our advertisers that we've got a really big audience willing to check this stuff out. So anyway, that's about all the time we have for today, and I'm going to leave you with this, the theme song for Lance Link Detective Chimp. And Lancelot Link Detective Chimp was a show from the 70s, and what was really unique about this show and really fun was that it was starred nothing but chimpanzees. Just a funny show. It aired from 1970 to 1972, and it was the back of the DVD set just came out, the original TV series. It's got, I believe, all of the original episodes here, so kind of cool, all in one big compaction. Two DVD set, and we're going to be giving some of these away. And if you'd like to win one of these, you can call the Retro Crush voicemail hotline and just tell me about your favorite monkey. And make sure you leave me your email address as well. So without further ado, here is the theme to Lancelot Link Secret Chimp.
Lancelot Link, secret chimp. Central justice has no fear. He's the ignorant and troubles near. Lance Link, you gotta come through with a buddy. It's coming on you. Maybe not ahead, and each and every friend that you'll stick by his side. Right to the end, Darwin is the leader on the side of the hood. Fight jump ages like a good egg. But you wicked all the same, old man. Sweet, what you gonna do when that doctor man comes up to you? Cause Ali, yes, I've seen and when you went through, and the dude's look can't really grow you. Oh, let not make secret chimp. Stand no justice, have no business. He's the agent that calls when trouble is near.